All right, so you guys know who I am. I'm not going to introduce myself. I think most of you do, and if you don't find me, I'll tell you about myself later. But this is about these three guys up here. So I've got Mark Hartman, Brian McGowan, Eric Lewis. Mark, tell us a little bit of your background. Who are you? If these guys don't know you, who are you?
So Mark Hartman, I am married. My beautiful wife, Maria, and I, we actually are celebrating 25 years of marriage in about 3 weeks.
Woo.
So we have four kids. We've got one just graduated college, two in college, and a high school senior. We've been going to Faith Bridge for about 18 years, something like that.
What do I do?
I'm an engineer.
What do I do? Yes, what do you
I'm
do?
I'm an engineer. I work in the energy industry, and I lead an engineering organization of about 70 or 80 people.
How many people are in the oil and gas energy sector of some
Everybody.
Kind?
Everybody. Half the room,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, at least half the room. How about home builders or real estate? Okay. All right. You're construction.
Construction.
You could throw construction in there.
It's different than residential.
You're right. You're right. That's why you keep turning me down when I want to get you to pour one of my houses. You won't do
yes.
it.
Yes. We'll let someone else do that.
But talk to this guy. He does streets. You can...
He doesn't do small projects.
He doesn't do... All right. So energy sector, how long have you been doing that?
25 years. Actually, I got married in October and started a new job in December and still have the same wife, same company. I like doing, staying with the same old things.
Wow.
Same. Don't tell my wife I said same old thing.
Same old, yeah.
Are we videoing?
You
that would be
right
amazing if we were videoing.
Okay. She's more beautiful today than the day we got married.
Wow.
Put that on video, Sean.
Yeah, it's being recorded. This
Pipe
is going
to
go viral.
Mark Hartman was married for 24 years.
He didn't quite make the 25.
He didn't make it to 25. I'll show
That'll
you
be next
same
year's
old.
Panel.
Yes.
Freshly what do you do when you mess up at home? Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
That was good. All right. Well, that's great, Mark. Thanks,
great.
Man. Yeah.
I'm Brian McGowan. Been married to Jenny for 23 years.
Different Jenny, in case, you know, just make sure we're
different
clear.
Different Jenny.
Than my Jenny.
Yeah.
Which is complicated when we text. I'm like, hey,
yeah.
I need to talk with Jen or Jenny.
It's never confused me. but I mean, yeah.
That's fair.
I've never assumed you'd text my wife, but.
Don't even have her phone number. You're right.
two kids, Joshua, 17. He's a senior at Klein Kane. Mary Claire is a freshman, 14, at Klein Kane. What else were we supposed to say?
What do you do?
Well, first, hang on, a little backstory to this is not the first time you've been on this stage.
No, it's not the first time.
You have a history with this stage.
I do have a history here. I served as the executive pastor from 2008 to the end of 2014 here at FaithBridge. Was in small business before that. Sold a business to come work at the church when our 17-year-old was a month old.
Wow.
Yeah, Ken waited 30 days before asking me to quit my job, which was very nice of him.
That was nice.
I think he was surprised when I actually did it. So did that for a long time. It was a really, really sweet time for our family between Josh being 30 days old and about 7 or 8 years old. And then went back into small business, which is what I do now with a guy named Tom Hargrove. Some of you might know him. He's one of the founders of Bridging for Tomorrow. He and I do residential real estate development. So we build neighborhoods. We don't build homes. We build neighborhoods.
Gives us a place to build.
Yes,
which
exactly.
I like guys like
yeah.
you.
Yeah. People ask us to build houses all the time. We're like, we have no clue how to do that. we've done that since 2014. And then Tom and I also help run a valve company that we invested in a couple years ago. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 2-3 years. But yeah, so I'm happy to be here, happy to be part of the men's ministry. When I, quote unquote, left staff at FaithBridge, our men's ministry, did it even exist? Did we have one?
We did Fireproof and Courageous.
Yeah, yeah.
Gerald Brown.
Yeah.
Biggest black guy I've ever known.
Yeah.
Sorry,
6'9",
Mike.
Basketball star at A&M.
It's like 6'10". Yeah. But I remember he was kind of in my role, loosely put.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, so when I heard from Jason Penberthy that the men's ministry was picking up steam. And then Josh got invited by William Werlein and Luke to be part of this, and he sort of drugged me along with him. So that's how I kind of got reconnected in. And man, I'm just, every Tuesday, I feel like it's just kind of a miracle that we get this many men to show up.
Seriously.
To be a part of what's happening here.
Yeah, so. I like that you said miracle. Yeah. But I would love to see the day when it's like, no, this is expected.
Yeah.
Like, it would be weird to not see men showing up.
Sure.
Well, it's so big, we've actually expanded to Wednesday night.
We have a Wednesday night, which, yeah, just 50, FYI, 50 guys.
50 more guys.
There's like a rivalry slowly happening. Yeah. Y'all don't know it, but Wednesday is talking about, like, we got to beat the Tuesday night guys. I'm like, oh. Well, and apparently, I guess 50. I'm not supposed to say this, but the first night when we did honey baked ham, everybody like honey baked ham? I love those sandwiches. Amazing. But apparently, Starla.
Just the brownie story?
Yes. Well, because y'all made a deal about it.
I did.
But like, we get cookies on Tuesday night, but Wednesday got brownies. And they've been like bragging about their brownies. So now I'm like, Starla, I don't need a rivalry happening between Tuesday and Wednesday. But yes, it's amazing. We're up to 60 guys, I think, are registered.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's about. Yeah,
that's bigger than where this study began.
We actually had like 9 or 10 new guys just this past week that showed up. So
wow.
We keep growing.
That's awesome. So in that same vein, it's never too late to bring a friend. So we got a couple guys that left their information saying, like, you know, do y'all have anybody that can register me? And it's like, we'll do it on the back end. Just leave your stuff. So bring the guys. So yeah, Brian, I am excited. He's actually teaching next week, right? Or is that Mark?
I hope not.
No, you're 3 weeks from now.
It's like right. October or something or another.
Yeah. I'm gone. Mike's
I can do next week too, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, not next week.
Y'all are going to love it. He's great. So we're excited that you're back in the lineup. It's going to be awesome. All right. And last but definitely not least, Mr. Eric Lewis.
I'm Eric. I'm 53. Delaney and I have been married 31 years.
Let's go.
From South Dakota. She's from Texas. So the only way that meets is the military. and that doesn't go well when you're from South Dakota, where there's not a lot of people. There's more cattle than people, and most people from Texas don't really know how to take people from South Dakota because the O is really long, and so you learn to try to get rid of that slowly. But she got out, she got hurt, and I ended up commissioning and spent 5.5 years in the military. Left there, went to Big Pepsi, and got tired of big corporations. So God led me on a journey to do small business. And then all I remember is the day we said we were going to open, Francine Reitmeyer came up to Delaney and goes, Delaney, you're going to spend a lot of your life on your knees. And you do, as a small business owner, spend a lot of time stressing about a lot. So you and God go on an interesting walk that's very varied, and there's lots of lows. There's highs, but seems like a lot more lows than that. So I've been Christian most of my life. We've been at FaithBridge since 2002. We officially joined. We started in 2001. We came for our first visit the week before 9/11 and then left for a while and then came back. So it was just a God thing that got us back in Texas, working for my father-in-law originally, and then he came to work with me later on. But I've been kind of in ministry mostly with couples and then with youth until about 10 years ago. I started getting called by other men at the gym into men's ministry, and then Danny got a hold of me a couple of years ago and said, hey, you know, and I've been on fire ever since I had a heart attack, which we'll get to, because there's just, you don't know that you're going to wake up tomorrow, and it's important, guys. So that's what we want to get into today.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Mark and I got really told our faith journey, because I think that's probably helpful.
Yes,
how did you come to know the Lord? Sorry, Danny, I know you're leading, but I've taken over.
that's the first question.
Yeah, that's why it took 11 years to get him back on stage, because he just takes over.
So I have kind of there's a long kind of growth that mostly started here at FaithBridge. I did grow up going to Catholic school and going to church on Sundays, but I didn't really have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Didn't really understand any of that stuff, and probably spent the better part of my late teens well into my 20s, just not had never went to church, didn't really have any relationship with Christ, did a lot of really stupid stuff. And then we started going to church again after we got married. And then coming to Faith Bridge is probably when I really kind of started learning about my faith. But I did have a specific Sunday morning, Easter morning at my sister's church. I used to go to, even though we were going to Catholic church, we would go to my sister's church, which is non-denominational. And on Easter morning, they showed this very graphic depiction of the crucifixion that I'd never like, even though you see the cross, like I'm behind you at church and Jesus is on there, there's like a drop of blood. You don't really make the connection, but it was very graphic and it literally clicked like right then. And I just started crying and I'm not really a big crier, but I started crying and cause I just realized right then and there, like what he did for me. Mm. And it was like super powerful, obviously. And luck, my sister was there. She's a big part of my faith journey. And we made contact and she knew what I was experiencing then. So there was like that one moment of clarity, but then it's been a long journey, get to where I'm at today.
When was that? When did this happen again? You said,
at
how long
my
ago?
Sister's church? That was probably 20 years ago.
Okay, so you've been on a faith really since then?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I'd never read a Bible, never did
still?
A lot of anything. No, I then. I've read my Bible. It's right here. I'm the only one with the Bible. I got it right here.
I'm thinking, man, we got to vet these guys better before we put them up. I'm just kidding. That's good. I love that.
That's it.
Okay. All right. It's been a journey ever since. Brian.
Sophomore year of high school.
Oh, boy. We're going back.
Cute girl invited me to Young Life. Started going to Young Life. Went to Frontier Ranch. Threw my stick in the fire. Came to know the Lord. Never looked back. My Young Life leader was a guy named Brett Wingo, who would take us up to College Station to this Bible study at Central. He was roommates with Greg Mott, who started Breakaway.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Didn't mean anything to me back then, but then I became an Aggie. That was pretty
Don't
weak.
Do that. Don't do that.
That was really weak.
Woo!
There you go.
Met Jenny our freshman year, first class geology. And thought we were dating because I would take her every Tuesday to Breakaway. She thought we were just friends, but after 8 or 9 months of taking her to Breakaway.
I was going to say, when did y'all figure that out?
Like literally 9 months later.
Wow.
Yeah, I just had to beg for 9 months.
Either you were dragging your feet or you were really courting her well, because like.
Yes. Yeah. So Breakaway was a big part of our college experience. When we moved to Houston, we actually lived in this part of town, but would drive to First Baptist because Greg Mott was leading that church there.
We crossed paths because that's exactly what our story was. Same way.
And our good friends were, the Penberthys were coming to Faith Bridge, and we swore we would never go to a Methodist church. but we had a hard time even figuring out where it said Methodist.
Then it was like a long time ago. It was a little tiny word right underneath.
The first Sunday they brought us, Ben was preaching. Donna and Jimmy Needham were singing. And we're like, this place is amazing. So that was 2005. We were probably only at Faith Bridge for 6 months or less before they moved over here. So we didn't have to spend a lot of time setting up and tearing down. So Breakaway was a big part of our journey. Now I get to serve. I'm on the board of directors for Breakaway now, so I get to serve in a different capacity, but watching 10,000 Aggies gather on a Tuesday is an amazing thing. So,
I think that's also why, not to brag on A&M, but that's also why we, as Aggies, produce more in ministry than any other university in America that go from undergrad to ministry of some kind.
Yeah, I believe
it. So, there's a movement going on.
That's not true.
Huh?
That's not true.
It is true.
That's one of those Aggie myths.
He's a Longhorn, by the way.
I think Baylor produces more, I'm just saying.
Baylor.
Okay, Arch.
That's because you have kids that go to Baylor.
I have a kid that went
to Baylor. All right, Archie.
Uh-huh. I know.
Not many from UT, though.
All right, that's my favorite.
Anyways, we're derailing.
So we're running out.
I still read my Bible. Time.
You still read your Bible. That's good. Well, so I'm glad you brought a Breakaway, because same way for us. When we graduated, we followed him to First Baptist, same way. And then we get married, and we moved to this area, and somebody, same way, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, oh, yeah, this is like 2007. It's like, you ought to go check out, you know, this church called Faith Bridge. In fact, the Breakaway director's there. And we, of course, in our, you know, naivete, we're like, there's no other, you know, Breakaway director other than Greg Mott. Who, like, what? Like, you're just not even thinking, oh, yeah, he's at First Baptist. He's, we were gone. That's, you know. But same way, it was Matthew Bailey, Lizzie Bailey, and Ben Stewart. And we were like,
strong.
That's why, you know, the first time we came here, yeah. Ben Stewart was preaching too.
All right.
Man, this guy's awesome.
Okay, this and isn't a Ben
go,
Stewart. This
and they go,
is,
he's not, he's not the pastor. Like,
the Ben Stewart fan club.
The Ben Stewart fan club. Yeah. Well, really, it was the Baileys that actually, I mean, I love Ben, but it was the Baileys, which yeah. I know we get them a couple times a month now, but yeah. It was amazing. Anyway, so, well, that's great. I'm glad you guys shared that. Thank you all. So we've been exploring this semester so far the concept of peace requires war, or peace through war, however you want to say it. And I really like all of you guys are leaders in your own right. And in some form or fashion, we do believe that every man is called. You know, if you have an influence over somebody, you're leading that person, right? So I wanted to really explore the idea of leading through a struggle, like leaning into what was it that you experienced, something in your life. So maybe just, there's no particular order, you can popcorn this, but what was the season in your life that you just found it was really difficult to just weather? And how do you think you led well? And maybe as a lesson, how did we not lead well? Because I think we have to first admit also when we got it wrong in some ways. So if anybody is just dying to go.
I can take that. There's a long version of this. So I'll give you the short version. But so I work in corporate America. And so if you work in corporate America, you're familiar with reorgs, right? I don't know how many I've been through in 25 years. But there was a time when I was leading a group, and we were struggling. I mean, we were understaffed. We didn't have enough people, and I was just like begging for help. Like I needed some help. Some of my leaders were kind of mad about where they were at, and so I was talking about this for a while. And finally, my vice president called me in his office one day and said, "Hey, good news. We're changing the organization to fix things, and you're not leading it anymore." And they brought another guy in and put him in charge of my group. And you know, and I got the joy of staying in that group, but I was no longer leading it. I was leading a portion of the group, and I was mad. And it's probably the closest I've ever come to quitting. And I'm still with the same company today, by the way. And I had it, luckily, and I will say this is part of my story, I had a really good mentor. There's a guy who discipled me for a year. He's a retired pastor. Very transformational for me, and so I left. I mean, I literally walked out of my office. My VP said, "You know, what are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know." And I walked out, and I went and talked to Bob, and he listened to everything. He said, "Mark, I don't really know everything that's going on in your company." He goes, "But you need to stay, and you need to help the new guy succeed." And I was like, "What?" I thought Bob was like, "You need to go kick that guy." No. And I'm like, "What are you talking about, Bob?" And he said, "Look, go read this. You remember the story of Joseph in Genesis? You know, look what he went through and how God led him and challenged him and all. He was wrongly accused, but he ultimately became the second leading person in all of Egypt." And he said, "Do you know, you think if God wants you to lead this department that you wouldn't be leading it?" He goes, "There's a reason why he did that, or he allowed that to happen." And he goes, "So you need to go back and help this guy succeed, and everybody in your department will respect you for that." And so I did. And so I went back. And the new guy, it wasn't his fault. He didn't do anything. There was a reorg. They needed to move somebody from another part of the company back to Houston, and they just put this guy in the position. And so I helped him. And the guys, there were multiple people in the group were really mad for me. And there was even a couple guys like, "We're getting out of here. We're not doing this." And I just told everybody, "Hey, let's just work through this." And I stayed for about 3 years. I stayed in that role and helped him run that organization. Ultimately, then I moved to another part of the company. And so there's a kind of a silver lining to this is that there was a subsequent reorg, and there was multiple people that were let go at a certain level. And if I would have been in that job, and this guy came from another part of the company where he was favored, but I would have probably lost my job. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, who knows, everything could have worked out. But because I wasn't in that role, I probably didn't lose the job. And today I have the same. I've been elevated. I've got a bigger, better job today anyway. And it just took a few more years to get there. But that was hard. It's hard, man. It's hard to walk in the office. It's, you know, you go through thoughts of, are you embarrassed?
Yeah.
Are you, all those kind of things. So, but it was really good. Guys that I worked with back then, today, still, we talk about it occasionally, and I tell them, like, this is what, why I did that.
So articulate that, what was the thing that made it hard? Like, I mean, we see the picture, but verbally describe, what was the thing that made it difficult?
Look, as a human, honestly, the root of, I know this, the root of all sin is pride, right? But we have pride. So part of it was just the pride of not getting a job that you felt, you know, you should have. It was hard to help somebody that has your job. I mean, that's hard. All in all, it was extremely difficult. It was hard to have to talk to people who would say things about this organizational change, and I had to not pile on. I mean, I could have blown things up, you know, I could have been piled on and like just made things super miserable for the whole department. It wouldn't have been good for the company, it wouldn't have been good for me or anybody. So really, it was just being humble all the way through it and approaching it in a way. And I'd go talk to Bob and he'd ask me, how you doing with that, Mark? Like, it still stinks, Bob.
It still
but
stinks.
I'm trying, and so
yeah, so what I'm hearing is that you actually were leading even though you weren't in a position of leadership. So leadership isn't about position, is what it sounds like.
It's not about position. I mean, I will tell you, after that, for those next 3 years, many people in the department didn't talk to the new guy. Mm. They would still come to me for things that they really should go to him for. And I would even push people like, man, you need to go talk to him about that.
It's not my problem. You can deal with that guy.
No, I would do it in a loving way, Danny, of course.
Yeah, of course, but, always in a loving way.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to take a big plate of humble pie.
Did you ever get any recognition for it? For how? That season?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, I had a few people, friends at work that knew the whole story and, you know, and they appreciated it and they, you know, it wasn't, you know, nobody was coming to me, pat me on the back.
No.
Hey, good job. So,
I thought leadership was all about getting praise. Isn't that?
No,
wasn't. The new guy had flat tire, but.
Yeah.
One day his tires all were slashed. I don't know what happened. No, I'm joking. That never happened.
I don't know where that slash came from.
No, did not do that. So, yeah, it's just part of. And I've learned. I've been able to use that story to help other people, even in my own organization or other people in the industry when they go through some challenges. That's like how God does that. He takes you through stuff like that so that you can have empathy for other people. You know, we talked about. You know, you came to Christ when you were a teenager. Mine was much later, and I've got a long period of time that was, you know, kind of messy, and so I can absolutely relate to people who have messy stories. Like, you know, hey, how can I come to men's ministry? I used to do this and do that. I'm like, dude, I did all that stuff, and God still welcomes you. So I can be empathetic about things that maybe others can't.
Amen. That's good. Thanks, brother. You guys, some of y'all probably relate with losing or feeling like you deserve something that somebody else got, and then you still got to work for that person. Anybody? Just me that feels that way? So, thanks. Thanks for sharing that, brother. It was good. What about one of you guys leading through a difficult season?
I have a number of them. But
it's more of like, you know, valley to valley to valley to valley.
Yeah,
is that kind of the,
well,
give us the worst one.
It's the neat part of going through what we're doing with David in the sermon series right now is because David had those ups and downs and he had that. But my last one, I had a heart attack at 49 years old. Best shape of my life. I was in the military. I was in good shape. I was actually better shape. I was stronger, maybe not quite as fast, but pretty close. I probably had more endurance even at 49. And without warning, my memory stops. And about 8 hours later, I have a massive widowmaker heart attack. And I'm like, I woke up 6 days later. And so you lose perspective, and then you wake up and your eyes won't dilate, and I'm downtown, I don't know anything. It took 2 days to figure out that I didn't have an accident and cause someone to get hurt. I thought I'd hurt somebody, but I was tied to the bed because they didn't want me to move. This was 6 days after the event.
You were like tied? Like...
I was physically tied because I got my first two surgeries at Willowbrook, and they got me there in a little over an hour. And so I'm 49. I just talked to my wife. I'd flown back from Amarillo's on a construction site with some problems, so that was fun. But flew back, don't remember any of it. Talked to Delana for about an hour and a half. Went to the gym, worked out, went to pick up food, and I woke up 6 days later.
Wow.
And the part of it that, so I woke up and I could see Delana, and which was neat, this God thing, but my eyes are so big that, and they won't move. So, they're doing all those tests that you're doing, and I have really no feeling in a bunch of parts of my body yet. I can't move my eyeballs won't move, so I have to move my head, and that's about all I can do. And so they start talking about, well, he's brain damaged, and we don't know how bad it is, and I'm there. And so this goes into about five of the questions that is just a big deal. So I don't want to take all the time, Danny, but it's this part of you're there, but no one knows it. Mm. And there's a lot of people that with health things, I think one of the reasons God gave me this is there's an empathy for people that are hurt and people that have things that we don't understand with health, because I was fully there and I heard everything they said, but I couldn't communicate. I'm tied down, and after a day and a half, they let me, and I couldn't even grab a pencil, but when I did, I kind of grabbed it and was like this, and Delaney's, she's sitting there, and I can see it on her face, and a couple more days, it got a little better, but the things I started really learning, because you sit in your mind for a couple days without being able to communicate, there's nothing to go to except God. Mm. You start going back to the stories of the Bible that where God's come through, where God saves people, God rescues people. When they cry out, like, I got nothing but God, I had nothing but God sitting in, gentlemen, in that hospital bed, tied down, and I got nothing except, trust in the Lord your God. Don't be anxious, but in everything with prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. And I'm like, I don't have a lot to be thankful for, but I'm going to try this thing. And, it's like you're going to go to God, and it's you do that, but there's such neat things that have come out of it. Even with a damaged heart, I get to understand I'll never be that, but I get to be something greater because God has called me to something that's way beyond small business, way beyond, just being a guy. It's like, no, you're going to go walk with men, and that's what you're going to do, and that's what God's called me to do. And it's like, so guys, my encouragement tonight for me is that guy that's sitting across from you or needs it. So like when I got out of the hospital, guys would come and talk to me, and I mean a whole bunch of them that work for me, I work for them. A bunch of my customers would come over and they saw me, and it's like, they wanted to know, what'd you do? And I'm like, man, I spent time talking with Jesus. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yep. And and it created such good conversations because they're hungry. That man across from you doesn't, his purpose, he doesn't know it. He doesn't know what he's there for. I mean, he'll say stuff and he'll do stuff, but he doesn't really know deep down what he wants. And he wants to do something, fight for something. And I think through that, Danny, of all things I got through that, is I got some empathy. I got to learn how to really rely on God like I'd never have in 49 years. But then I got to learn that you don't have to do anything but just listen. Because in the end, you open the door because they want to know what you want. But in the end, very quickly, it's not about me, it's about them. Because once that hose of trust opens up and they start to talk to you, they're going to be this well that will just let out their story. So just be there and let them do it.
Come on, preach, brother. Wow. Okay. So I do, I'm curious, what is the what happened in the 6 days? Do you remember anything in those 6 days?
Nope.
Nothing? Not a clue?
As my daughter says, you were napping.
You were napping.
I was napping.
Napping.
So, all they do is they put me in some kind of, they, I'm sure, sedated me, and they talked because they didn't know, and they didn't know if I was going to make it at any point in time. They thought it could have been hit or miss the whole time. And I think the other thing that is just a God thing for me is, even I was at a wedding for one of my nieces or nephews maybe a year ago, and I got to sit and talk to people that prayed for me that were from the other family because they had been dating a few years. So my niece's husband's family got to talk. I got to learn about people from my military days of friends that I had that were still deployed. I've got people that have worked for me that have family in Central and South America that prayed for me. I got churches all over the U.S. that are praying because my dad's one of 17 kids. So I got family everywhere, and that's a whole different story. You don't have a lot to do.
Wow.
Did you say 17?
I don't think you can drop 17 on us and just keep going.
Like, when you're in South Dakota.
South Dakota, nothing to
cold
do.
Cold winters.
Yeah, there's
let's just make kids all day.
All the kids are born between end of July and October. So
this is your dad, right? Your dad was 17.
My grandfather was.
No, it's not about your grandfather. It's about your grandma. That what a
hey. Let's not talk about his grandma. That's awkward. Okay,
man.
But yeah, there's I've got family. I've got cousins and everywhere. So it's just you get this, but you get an opportunity to when you learn that when they talk about intercessory prayer for a brother, it's real.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like it's real, guys. And I've had men and women that I know prayed for me, and God heard their, and God smelled that prayer and that as incense, and He acted in my life, and I can never be thankful. I mean, that's all I can say to people that I know prayed for me. I mean, there's hundreds, thousands of people at Faith Bridge I know that we've known in the 20-some years that we grew up in this church, and that I will never be able to thank enough for praying for us because they prayed for me, and I don't deserve it. But through the grace of God, He brought me through. So
you were picking up food at T-Gens, right?
T-Gens.
I walk into T-Gens every time and think Eric Lewis almost died right here.
Yeah, right in that entrance right there is where I went down.
Yep.
So.
And that's.
And Shelly, her and her sister are up there in the front, and I thank them because I still go in there because I just go in to thank them.
That's
all
awesome.
The time. Mm. Yeah, that and the chiropractor was a lady I got to meet her. She was a doctor from the Joint, and then the vitamin bar, whatever they call that thing.
Hormone place.
They move now.
I know what you're talking about.
But they do the vitamins, intravenous and all that. So she was a ER nurse. But the doctor at the Joint and the ER nurse are the ones that started CPR for me. So great. Bless those people every time you walk in because I just love them.
I've never had a heart attack.
What's that?
I've never had a heart attack.
Me neither.
I did go to the cardiologist at 40 because my dad died early of a heart attack. So,
calcium score.
What?
Calcium score.
Did you get the calcium score?
I did all that. I did nuclear stress test anyways.
Sean, let's get him one if he hadn't had one. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't have a heart attack. So not as interesting. Came to know the Lord early, so I didn't make a lot of mistakes like Mark.
Go ahead and put that one.
No, I do remember. I literally do remember it. Being in college and being in ministry and thinking, my testimony is so boring.
Yeah.
I didn't get arrested or do drugs or any of the fun stuff that
Mark Harden
did.
Well, that's why I knew I needed a story. That's why I did.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I had to live it up because I'm like, God's going to use this, so I need a good testimony. So I'm just going to have fun right now.
I will say one thing that I just want to be careful of because, first of all, thank you for your service being in the military. I was never in the service, and my respect for people who serve in the military is just unreal. So when I see it says a time that you felt at war, I'm always thinking, I've never been at war. I love Saving Private Ryan.
I say spiritually, emotionally, physically.
I know, I'm just telling you. I get very sensitive to men who like sign up to go to war because I just, my respect for them is.
Well, nobody signs up to go to war. They're just like, they'll pay for my college. I'll be a truck
Danny,
mechanic.
Okay.
You know.
Anyways.
But you end up in a war. We all end up in a war.
Though. Okay.
So, yeah. Danny's, but I appreciate
Danny's
that.
Right. Danny's right. So what I was going to say was the closest thing I can say for me, and it was business-wise, I left FaithBridge to go into business, and Tom and I did a neighborhood called Rose Hill Reserve. Some of you might even know where that is or live over there.
I know one guy in this room lives over there.
And so we did phase one of it. We were putting these lots on the ground, and we were about $18 million into a $20 million phase one where we're putting all these lots on. And our bank was on CNBC for getting raided for being a Ponzi scheme. So we had to press pause and couldn't finish the lots, which means we couldn't make money, we couldn't do anything. Thankfully, we found some guys, a group of guys who ended up helping us finish that. But what we were able to learn in that, like, sort of 8 months of craziness, like, we literally thought we were going to just have to go find a job. Like, it's like, this isn't going to work, just because everything was going haywire. Really, really does help you to sort of assess where your value is. Is my value in being a businessman and being successful, or is it being a husband and a father and a follower of Christ? Also in those moments, I think that you can just like freak out, or you can say like, what am I gonna learn in this moment? I don't have an MBA, but the stuff that we learned in that moment, just through like, how do you fund things not in a bank, but through like private equity and different things? It's how we do our whole business now. Like, since that moment, we've never borrowed another penny from a bank. We just borrow it from private guys who make it much easier. They're much more expensive, but they're a lot faster, and they typically don't get on CNBC. So that was sort of one of the things that I struggled through. I think that we were kind of touching on it, but I wanted to just talking about leadership. And I'm going off script because, I mean, it says 8:30
and 35
seconds.
Yeah, actually,
I was
going to say, before, hold that, because, yes, I agree. I want to just explore that. We had technical difficulties that set us back like 10 to 15 minutes. If you need to leave because you've got to be somewhere.
We'll call you out.
You know, yes, we're going to.
No, I'm just kidding.
Point out, we have your keys up here. You got to come up here, Jack, and get them. I'm just kidding. But if you need to go, please feel free. But if you wouldn't mind, like, let's go a little bit more since we got behind.
Yeah. So what I was going to say was just in leadership, I think for me, leadership has a lot less to do with having a mic or like you were saying, just being having a title and being the leader, and more of serving others. The thing I was thinking through when we were processing the questions you had sent us was, and Josh and I talk about this often, is you get Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer of all time, Tom Brady, the GOAT. And both in different moments have said that they reached the pinnacle of their career and looked around and said, this is what it's all about. Like, there has to, I think Tom Brady's the famous one for saying there has to be something more. Tiger Woods was at his pinnacle and said, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and try to get better. They're like, how can you get better? So I think
your body's only getting
weaker. Exactly. Like, but I think that they were trying to find fulfillment in accomplishments and achieving goals. And I think as men of God, if we think that way, we'll really be trapped in that our purpose is to know God and make him known. I think it can be as simple as that. And how do we do that? We lead by, I think, serving first our wives if we're married, second our families, and then it sort of extends out from there. And so, like, when I wake up every morning, I'm not thinking, like, how am I going to lead my wife today? How am I going to lead my son today?
Really? Yeah,
if you know wife, that's an interesting proposition anyways.
Wait. Who is your wife, for those that don't know?
Her name is Jenny McGowan. She's the superintendent of Klein ISD.
Superintendent.
Yeah.
So your wife is like the boss of all of our kids.
She's the boss of, yes, sure, absolutely.
Anyway. Yeah, so it's funny that you say, how do I lead my wife?
Yeah.
When she in her own right is very much.
Well, but to that point, I think it's, I really do think that you flip it. I mean, that's what the Bible is. It's the first will be last.
Right.
Right. So I wake up every morning. How can I serve Jenny? How can I serve Amen. Josh? How can I serve Mary Claire? And that's how I lead my family. I know we were joking about being fanboys of Ben, but the way he has described, how do you lead your wife spiritually? Because I think as men, a lot, our table was kind of talking about it, but I think we could have imposter syndrome. Everyone's heard that. It's like we start walking with the Lord, and then we're like, hey, Mark, remember what you did when you were 20? You know, well, it's like, yeah, but I love the Lord now. Like, that's not me. When we walk with the Lord, I think that as men, we can get tricked into thinking that, like, that's not really who we are, right? Mm-hmm. That's not really who Mark Hartman is. Like, I know you as the guy who's known the Lord for 20 years. I didn't know you beforehand. But if you were to spend time with people that knew you in, like, say, high school, it could be confusing for them, right?
It would be really confusing.
Yeah, it would be. But no, the way Ben described it was, we figure out the things that help our wives flourish, and we do those things. We serve them in that way, right? So if your wife needs you to do X, Y, and Z so that she can be successful, that's how you lead her. You don't say, babe, open up your Bible to 2 Corinthians, and we're going to be, you know, going through this Bible verse. I mean, I guess you could do that, but that's, to me, a little bit less leadership and more sort of dictatorship, you know, about how you're going to do that. Yeah. So that was my whole point, is that I think that a life of service, serving others, is how we find fulfillment in leadership. That was my whole point. Sorry.
That's good.
Because isn't that how, I mean, Jesus walked that same path. Jesus didn't walk in and, you know, everybody didn't believe because he said something. I mean, there was people that heard him preach, but they came because he was serving them. And that's, Brian, what I think your meaning is. How do we serve well like Jesus did, and then bring it through natural conversation of sitting and listening and asking questions? How do we bring God into that discussion?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of friends, and I, we've been processing the term leadership. It seems to be everywhere, and like feel like it's inundated in our culture, right? Everybody's talking about leadership. Let's go to leadership conference, and there's leadership summit, and leadership this. And I think what I'm hearing you guys say, and this is where we've landed, is leadership, A, is never to be attained. It's not the thing that you're capturing. If anything, it like requires a descriptive, you know, adjective before it to even understand, is it good, is it bad, is it, you know, yes, it's just the thing. But actually, leadership is never, or leader, is actually never spoken in Scripture. I think maybe like one time it talks about leading some way, but like that word we take in a culture and made it something. But if anything, what Scripture talks about is serving, right? So really the ideal is, what is Christ-like leadership, right? If we're going to take a cultural term, it's like, okay, how do we put it in the context of Jesus? It's quite literally say, what is Christ-like leadership? And that's how men of faith, we should be walking. To your point, is it's now about serving. It's not about, what did I attain? How much money do I make? How many people follow me at the office? How many people listen to me preach, you know, on Sundays? That's not what it is. It's quite literally is, how are we serving? How do I serve first my family and then beyond? So,
yeah, I mean, Jesus washed feet. So,
yeah.
I'll give you a quick
mic drop moment.
I'll give you a quick husband tip.
Husband tip. Here we go.
Wash your wife's feet. Read her some scriptures, and good things will happen.
Okay. All right. And with that, it's time to go, because I'm going to go wash my wife's feet. No. Okay.
I meant you'd stayed married for a long time. I don't know what you were thinking. But,
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, serve your wife well, brother.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Put That's her good. First.
So the other one, Danny, one of your other questions is, how do men flourish? And for me, I think a lot of my flourishing is, I got challenged hard by Delana to lead. Number one, I mean, there's, you know, when your best friend walks up to you after years of marriage and goes, hey, are you going to lead or am I going to lead?
Ooh.
it was a very sobering thing. And then the second is to, but I think that takes us far, but I think the other part that really pushes it is I had a couple men from Faith Bridge come alongside me and just really challenge me, and I started to journey with another man. I started to journey with a brother on my side. I started to journey with a man that was a little bit older than me, and I journeyed with some younger guys. But it was the younger guys that challenged me more than even my brother on my side. And it's because when you start walking in front of younger men, and guys, I challenge you to do it and see what happens to your faith. And it can be, as Brian said, your kids, but I also challenge you to do another man that's younger than you, because when you start to examine what you look like and what he sees in you, the question is he going to want to follow you? And that's the leadership that, because those disciples gladly said, I'll go follow Jesus. And there's something in them that they knew he was. But the question is, will a younger man look at you and me and say that same thing, I'm willing to follow you? So yeah. That's where I'd like to challenge you all to say, if you want to flourish, you're going to do it by looking at a younger man and going, let's go walk and come follow. Let's go follow Jesus together.
Yeah. So I love how you put that, because yeah, Jesus never said, hey, by the way, I'm your leader. Now he did say, follow me.
Yeah.
But he didn't say, I'm the leader, serve me. Like, it wasn't anything to attain. In fact, he even said that. His relationship with the Father was, he never found it as something to attain, right? His divinity was not to be attained. Anyway, so for the sake of time, we're going to start wrapping up. But we have had a couple questions come in that really, I think, they're all dancing around the same topic. And I'm gonna answer it with a, you know, yes or no or add to it. But here's generally the theme is like, what's the quality, what's the biggest quality of leadership that we would say? Or one we had was, how do we, as men of faith, what would be the attribute that we would be seeking? And I think we've been talking about this, but there is one that came in that said, how do I lead amidst adversity in the context of home and family? And I think it's the same answer. And my answer would be, if you're struggling with your wife, and you're asking, how do I lead her? That's probably the wrong question. Because somebody else should say to, and this is how I've taken it. Like, please y'all challenge me if I'm like, I'm a great leader. Like, y'all be like, really, dude? Like, I would want y'all to tell me, hang on. But it is even weird when somebody said, you know, Danny, I you know, your leadership this, or I love the way you lead. It does feel a little weird, but it's also like, it really does need to come from someone else. I can't walk up and be like, I'm leading so well, like I'm seeking to lead. I think where I would want to leave us with is we should be saying, how am I serving? Like, so if you're wanting to lead, which is what I'm hearing you all say, the attribute, the quality of leadership that we need to retain, especially in the context of our wives, if you're married, and for those that are single, listen up, put this in your piggy bank for future, is instead of leading your wife, serve my wife. How do I serve? So I've said this when I've wed people before. I know you have wedded people before. And yeah, I say this all the time when we talk about that scripture of, you know, God challenges us to do something that's not natural, right? So he says to the wife, submit to your husband. Well, that's not for the husband to say, yeah, woman, submit, right? He's actually challenging, because when you go back to the garden, it was difficult for Eve to submit to the role that she had been given, and instead she fought her husband. And so it's difficult to have to have that spirit. But to men, he turns around, he says, now love them. Why? Because it's, I don't know many men, they're just naturally like, oh, it's so wonderful, it's lovely, and you're beautiful. Like, it's harder for us to be gentle and caring and kind. So it's a challenge to the wives and challenge to the men. But the point is I turn to the man, and it's the biggest challenge to us. So suck it up, guys. You can't go home and be like, hey, you're supposed to submit. Bible says it. That is not what it says. Because the challenge is to you to say, give her a reason to follow. Give her a reason to submit. And walking up saying, I'm your leader, is not the reason. The reason is as Jesus did it, he got down on his knees and he washed their feet and he served. And only then will people go, huh, this is someone I would want to follow. So, does that sum it up? Is service, it's how we serve? Anything you want to add to that?
I mean, I yeah.
I mean, we don't have forever, so that's what I'm
I mean, yeah. Leading through adversity, I mean, so that could be loaded, right? I mean, maybe you're just having an issue about how to parent your kids, right. Or maybe you're on the verge of divorce. I don't know what.
We don't know. Yeah, but, there's no
but, context. So I'm saying, is I think in all of those scenarios, that's the solution, is you serve. Have to serve. You're not there to win. You're not there to prove her right or wrong. You're there just to figure out what are her needs, and how can you serve her in those moments. Yeah, I don't think you walk in declaring, I'm the leader, woman. Yeah. Listen to me.
Yeah, and I think, well, in any, to your point, in any context, wherever this person is, or maybe there's several in this room, whether it's I'm just having a difficult time with my teenage daughter, or I'm having a, you know, my wife and I are good, but how do I lead better? Or it's we're on the verge of divorce. Like, we don't know, and all of us may be at some point. But to the point, it's ask yourself, how can I just even serve? And I know Sean, back in the back, has said this before. Like, when a marriage is on the fritz, it is amazing the power of just hold your tongue, kneel before your wife. She could be, you could be dead right in whatever it is, and she could be just wrong. But man, is that not how Jesus turned away wrath when he just knelt and served? And it's amazing how that can move the needle. But you start talking, I mess it up. I'm the first one to stick your foot in your mouth. To stop talking, Danny. Just wash your feet. So,
I'd like to add something unrelated to marriage. Those are all great things. But going back to one of the things we talked, because this is about men, where the question is, like, how do you get to a place to lead, or how do I, there were some questions like, what do you say to a man that's seeking meaning and purpose, struggling to pick up the torch of leadership? I would say, like, a couple things that were transformational for me is you need to be, everybody should be discipled or have a mentor in their life, regardless of how young you are, how old you are. You should have somebody at some point, like, lead you. And I speak to that because I had a very intense, like, 1.5 years, but the relationship still goes on. Or mentor somebody. Some of you guys are perfectly capable of mentoring somebody. Some of you guys, like, I need somebody to mentor me. Find that. Go find that person in both directions. A great example, I guess some shameless plugs for FaithBridge. I mean, a great example of way to lead is to sign up to lead on a road journey. They're always looking. I was just talking to Missy Kern a couple days ago. They're always looking for men to lead these journeys with. And I go on them. And look, I'm telling you right now, I go on them myself. And there was a time when I would rather get hit in the foot with a hammer than go on a mission trip with a bunch of teenage kids. I can't stand not to go now. I've been 3 years in a row, and I'm going to keep doing them. And they're a great way to teach you how to lead, but also get a chance to lead. And so if you're thinking, like, I want to learn how to lead, like, that's a great way to learn and also serve your church. But
and trust me, you're not leading these kids. You're literally serving.
Yeah. It's definitely like, servant leadership.
You
for
serve
sure.
them with your sleep that you give them.
Yeah. So that's really, yeah. I mean, you can't learn how to lead on your own or just by, like you said, achieving a certain title at work doesn't make you a leader. There was one thing, like, what have you kind of learned? Like, there was a time earlier in my career where I spent a lot of time worried about getting things done at work and not looking at people, and I spend way more time today, and of course I'm later in my career, way more time today looking for people in the office where if there's something wrong, and you just kind of put yourself out there as somebody who can talk to, and people come in my office all the time to ask me questions about all different kinds of things, career stuff, life stuff. And there was a time when nobody would have done that because I would never. They wouldn't think I would be the person that would even have time for a question like that. But when you put yourself out there in that manner and you're seeking that, people will come talk to you and ask you questions. And I get way more joy out of helping a second-year engineer figure out their career than, you know, bringing some big project in and making a bunch of money for the company. You know, it's great to do both, but with way more joy helping somebody. You know, this goes back to kind of the servant side of things. Helping somebody at work is being a leader. It's not who the boss is. It's helping somebody else serving at work. You are a leader when you do that.
Yeah. That's when people will follow. Give them a reason to follow.
As we wrap up, because we're going to get out of here.
We really got
to go wash some feet.
Yes, for the benefits to follow.
I want to make one last point, is I don't think that any of this talk about like serving is natural. I think it's a choice.
Yep.
So I don't want anyone to hear that these three, or I guess we'll include Danny, four guys. Man, those guys are awesome. They just serve their wives.
Into what category?
They serve their wives. They serve their families. They're so holy. Like we wake up and it's a choice. Like, yeah. I mean, there's days I don't want to do that. I don't want to serve. I don't want to, you know, and that's the sin nature coming in. But it's a choice to serve and to do those things. And, you know, it's your spiritual act of worship, right? To do those things with your wife.
Ours is the bed, making the bed. Like, Jenny just physically cannot make a bed.
So
and it's like, it's my thing. It has to be the first thing I do. But there's days where I'm like, you know, I'll get up. She's the last one out of the bed, you know. And I'm like, I got to get to work. And I come back. And if y'all repeat this, I will.
We're recording, bro. You're done.
Recording. I know. It's going to come out. She knows. But it's like her thing. Like, I'm like, okay. Now I can either go, why would you ever make the bed? You know, or it's like, just make the bed. But to your point, there are some days where you're just like, babe, come on, hon. Like, pull the sheets. So it's not perfect, to your point.
She's going to hear this, and you're going to need to wash your feet.
Yes. I wash a lot of feet.
All right, we got to wrap up, bro.
Yes. Hey, can I invite one of you guys who'd be willing to pray over the group, and then y'all will be dismissed and on to next week? Thanks, Mark.
Yep. Father, we thank you, first of all, just for the opportunity to come together as men and to kind of wrap around a table and learn more about your will for our lives. Father, we thank you for what FaithBridge allowing this to happen and for just all these men that are showing up every week. It's just really amazing, Father. And we just ask that you would continue to be with this ministry, that you would continue to keep the doors open for men to come in here each week, and that you would grow them, that you would provide them opportunities to lead in their own right in whichever way that you desire that to be, Father, that you would make them humble. To look for that and to be willing to lead in the way that you desire. We ask that you would send everybody home safely this evening. We love you and praise you. Amen.